The question is, how is it Oli? A person who is calling himself Truma means he makes himself holy. He said he might be even holy. He says, I'll give you an example. Somebody who learns Torah whole day. Himself, if I have to go to run into politics, I waste my time. Why should I be busy with controlling the city, how the city is doing well in the water system? I can even this time learn Torah. You understand what I'm saying? Why they should be busy? I see there is a fight outside. Why should I go stop the fight? I'm busy doing holier things, more important things. I'll give an example. A scientist who can invent a new medication. He says there is a need in his community, somebody to come and to help others. He says, I'll leave this job for others. I have more important things to do. That's how people explain to themselves why they don't get involved in community work. I don't say it's a good thing. That's where we're going. It's not a good thing. But it's called Truma. He makes himself like Truma. I set aside the holy food for the Kohen. It's holy. I'm a holy person. That's what he thinks to himself.
A self-proclaimed holy person.
Exactly. But this mistakes very great people made. We'll see in a minute. Steve, you want to continue?
Thank you. When Rabbi Asi lay dying, his nephew visited him and found him weeping. He said to him, my master, why do you weep? Is there a single law that you have not learned and taught? Indeed, even now your disciples sit in your presence. Is there any kind deed you have not performed? Your greatest virtue is that you withheld from acting as a judge and didn't allow yourself to take a position of control. Rabbi Asi replied, my son, that is why I weep. I may have to account for the fact that I refused to concern myself with the affairs of the Jewish people, though I was able to do so. Hence, a man of Terumah tears it down.
Uh-huh. Here is a story about a rabbi who was born in Babylon from the Talmudic, the great Talmudic scholars. He lived in the third century. And then he was a Kohen. It was a very important family. And then he made Aliyah to Israel. And he, before he died, he cried. And his nephew asked him, Rabbi, why are you crying? You were one of the greatest scholars. And not only this, you didn't want to know because when you're a judge and you make a mistake in the judgment of people and you find the person who is guilty to you make him not guilty and you take away money from Mr. A to Mr. B, not justfully, you take responsibility, you pay for it. That he tried to avoid it. Well, he needs it. That people should be angry with him because when you lead the Jewish people, even a small group, you have to treat every Jew carefully and properly. And God is like demanding from you, why didn't treat this person nicely? That he didn't want to do it. That he said that his nephew told him, you were not even a leader. Why are you crying? He says, that's why I'm crying, my son. I have to account for the fact that I refuse to consume myself with the affairs of the Jewish people, though I was able to do so. You see, when somebody who does not to be a judge and he pushes himself to be a judge, destroys the world. Somebody who can be a judge and is not a judge, again, destroys the world. Because when there is a hole, the wrong people come in. You were able to do it. You were capable. Why you didn't get up? Why you didn't step up? That's the question.
So Rabbi, that was then the Rebbe's decision to move forward after that short period where he wasn't.
Exactly, exactly. That's what I mean to say is every time a real leader, a real great person doesn't want to be busy with these kind of things.
Or Moses.
Any leader. That's why I said Moses and Isaiah, we brought the example from Isaiah. There is examples from all Jewish history. They didn't want to do it. But on the other hand, if you will not do it, who is going to do it? The wrong people. Then you have to agree to do it. Because a great scholar enjoys to learn. He doesn't need anybody's problems. He learns the book, enjoys the studying. He can be a teacher. He can teach people Torah. He doesn't have to be the leader. He doesn't have to be busy with every person's problem. just an example for the Rebbe used to stand on every Sunday for hours on his legs and receive every human being who came with his Torah. No matter what it is, no matter how foolish it was, the Rebbe looked on every child and gave him attention. And even the secretaries tried to push people away who spoke nonsense. The Rebbe called them back, says, tell me your problem. Once a lady came and saw the Rebbe, I saw you in the dream. The Rebbe smiled and told her, you can see me in reality. What do you need a dream? Here I am. Then the secretaries got all worked. She started to tell the Rebbe, remember the dream. You said, nuts, egozim. Then the secretaries already pushed her away. The Rebbe called her back and gave her all explanation what nuts means and what's the meaning. It's all, every person was like a gem in his eyes. And this, a regular scholar says to himself, what do I need this epic?
It's like that father and son in the cave, and they came out, and the son, they were studying for 7 years. I can't recall which.
So 12 years, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai and his son, and Rabbi Elazar. Yes. Oh, then hear the old talk, where the talk of the Rebbe goes. See, the Rebbe was speaking to young Chabad guys to go out and open Chabad houses all over the world. And many people didn't want to do it in the beginning. The Rebbe to break through, to change the old way of thinking. The old way of thinking is to stay by the Rebbe. Everybody wanted to be around the Rebbe. He was such an holy man, such an exciting person, such an interesting person. He used to teach Torah. It was amazing to be in something. As I heard somebody yesterday said, then to leave at that time from 770 to leave the Rebbe was to jump off on the fifth floor. You have to be crazy to do it. And the Rebbe want people to leave and to go to live in Alaska and in China and in Italy and in who knows where, and to share your Judaism with others. Nobody wanted to do it. Then the Rebbe brings a story as Rabbi Yassi cried for not doing it. Now we're going to talk, read the Rebbe's talk. Michael, you want to read?
Yeah, thank you. Don't isolate yourself. On the verse, these are the laws of the Midrash comments. The Torah says, with justice a king sustains the land, but the man of Terumah tears it down. If a person acts as though he were a Terumah, which is a set aside in a corner, and declares, what concern are problems of the community to me? What does their judgment mean to me? Why should I listen to them? I do well without them. He destroys the world. Hence, a man of Terumah tears it down. Meaning, Terumah, the portion of food set aside for priest, is safeguarded in a corner of the home to protect its sanctity and to ensure it does not mix with regular produce. If a person follows suit by placing himself in proverbial corner of society and declaring, I am holy and must not desecrate my sanctity by associating with others, God says of him, a man of Terumah tears it down, because this was not his intention with creation of the world. God wants us to channel the greatest spiritual revelation to be internalized even in the lowest levels of society.
Exactly. Everybody has to be a part. Because God did not create the world that only the holy people, the smart, the scholars should learn Torah and the rest of society should be lost. God wants everybody to be a part of it.
But Rabbi, you understand that this is kind of catch-22, as I'm calling, you know, when everyone's starting to think about how they can improve a society, I think that's what makes the whole situation much worse. Because I think if everyone takes care of own household, then first. Then it's improving society. You know, when everyone trying to do what's that called?
Tikkun olam.
Yeah. Then all the trouble starts right away. You know, when
tikkun olam. I hear what you say. The point is why Jews are so busy with tikkun olam. Because really God made the Jewish people to be the rabbis of the world. That's our job. Like there is a mezuzah in a house that reminds us about God. The Jew is the mezuzah of the world. Our job is to be the spiritual leaders of the world. Now, some people do it the right way. Some people do it the wrong way. Because God did not take away from people the freedom of choice. But the job is a job, you understand? Not because I do it the wrong thing, therefore I have to destroy it. For example, the internet. You can do with the internet amazing things, and you can do with the internet terrible things. We are not going to say, therefore, we should close down the internet. Television, when the Rebbe started to encourage the Hasidim to go on television to spread Judaism, the rest of the religious world were against it. How do you can spread the television Judaism? It's a machine that brings only bad things. The Rebbe said, the machine is not a bad, it's not bad. The machine is a machine. You can spread with the good things or bad things. The same things, the nature, the calling to save the world is a good calling. If some people utilize it the wrong way, that we are dealing with a problem. Yes, I agree. But not because of this. I'll tell you, if the good people would not say, I'm standing home and doing my own, minding my own business, if they would spread the what they believe, then they would tune they would balance the other side. But the good people say, oh, what do I care? I learned Torah. I'm doing well. I know what's right from wrong. Good Shabbos. Then these guys are going to do tikkun olam and ruining the world. It's up to us to spread good. You know, we cannot argue that they should not do. We cannot tell what other people not to do. The only way to change the world is by us doing good. The one somebody came to the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe in Russia and told them, we have an opportunity to ruin something for the people, Jewish people who are fighting Judaism. And the previous Rebbe said, we are not in the business of destroying. We are in the business of building. You have something good to do, do it. To destroy the others, it's not our business. And that's what it's all about. You're right, but the idea is really think about it. When Moshiach will come, or even before Moshiach will come, all the non-Jews, they want to learn Torah from the Jews. They want to know about God. Every Jew, I once made a calculation, will have to be a rabbi for 50,000 people. Are you ready? 50,000 non-Jews will ask you, tell us about the parsha of the week. Teach us Torah. Tell us about Kabbalah. Every one of us. That's what God is expecting from the Jews. That's why we are like the moon. The moon is a reflection of the sun, and also we are compared to the stars in the Bible. Why we compare to the stars? Like a star shows the way, we're supposed to show the way. Then you're right. There is a concept. We have to influence the world. Some people use it for good. Some people use it for bad. I agree with you.
Yeah, but leave to the human being and he will just will go to the direction which is, how to say it nicely, has nothing to do with Judaism, because they will just take it to the social justice type of things, and it will be totally against everything Judaism stands for. You know,
you might be right, but here is the Chabad rabbis, they are going to spreading Judaism. Then what I mean to say is, what people will do with it, the Rebbe is speaking to Chabad people, but really it's about me and you. I mean, Michael, you have friends that listen to you. You brought some friends to the shul. You brought friends to Yiddish guy. We not have to concentrate always about the other guys who are doing bad. You're talking about ourselves. You know, when the Rebbe is to speak something, but when he finished to speak, everybody turned to his friend and said, the Rebbe meant you. And everybody was like this. The Rebbe, when I learn something, I should. The Rebbe is to say, I'm not talking to the others, I'm talking to you. The Rebbe, I have to look to myself. Me, forget about the others. The moment we do more good, we'll tip the scale. That's what it's all about. It's tipping the scale.
I'll take that, absolutely.
Okay, Olga, you want to continue?
For this reason, the Chabad rabbis in general, and by my father-in-law, the previous rabbi in particular, sent out emissaries to engage with people of all levels. Their mission doesn't only benefit those whom they bring closer to Judaism. It benefits themselves as well, because they fulfill God's greatest wish to bring spirituality everywhere.
Okay, then first of all, I want to tell you that this is benefits for the person himself. I can be a full testimony for it. It's the best gift and joy that the Rebbe gave me to be a Chabad Shliach. It's something that's the best thing happened to in my life. And everybody who can be a Chabad Rabbi, it doesn't have to have a beard and a hat. All of you can become Chabad Rabbis. It's up to you, my friend. It's all in your hand. Continue.
The above mentioned Midrash indeed follows on the same note. When Rabbi Asi lay dying, his nephew visited him and found him weeping. He said to him, "My master, why do you weep? Is there a single law that you have not learned and taught? Indeed, even now, your disciples sit in your presence. Is there any kind of deed you have not performed? Your greatest virtue is that you withheld from acting as a judge and didn't allow yourself to take a position of control." The nephew saw it as a virtue. Rabbi Asi replied, "My son, that is why I weep. I may have to account for the fact that I refused to concern myself with the affairs of the Jewish people, though I was able to do so. Hence, a man of Teruma tears it down."
Here, what really is the story of Rabbi Asi? Rabbi Asi was a teacher. He was a scholar. He was teaching many people Torah. But he could be the chief leader. It's everyone according to his level, you know? Everyone, we're not expecting from a regular rabbi to be the chief rabbi. But somebody who could be the chief rabbi and he's not the chief rabbi, what is really accomplishing? Then another one who is becoming the chief rabbi is the wrong person. And Abbasi did a lot of good things. He was a complete tzaddik. His nephew told him, "You cry? You cry, but what wish we're going to do if you cry before you die?" Then he tell them, "I cry because I may be able to do to be a leader and I try to avoid it. It's nice to avoid, but on the other hand, the community is missing out." For example, I'll give an example that is good, true about many people. Many times people say, "I want to make a donation and I don't want my name in the newsletter. I don't want it on the wall." Sounds good, right? It's humble. It's actually written in Jewish law. You should give charity in a modest way that nobody should know. But there's another side to it. When somebody puts his name on the wall, his friend comes and says, "Oh, he put the name in the wall. I should do it too." A third person comes, "I should do it too." And it's motivating other people. When nobody knows, then I covered my own spiritual, that I shouldn't get ego. Yeah, I'm a very humble man. Oh, I'm a big tzaddik. But what is the benefit to the world? What the world benefited from it? What does God gain from your humbleness? That's a question. And this is in every level. That's what I'm saying. If somebody volunteers, tell other people. They also know. They will also do. It's all about inspiring others. Then when somebody says, "I'm very humble. I learn to myself. Nobody knows. I'm a great scholar in town and nobody even knows." Yishekoyach. What did the world benefit from it? Nothing. That's what really is going on.
Rabbi, can I ask a question about the tzedakah? So this notion of anonymous tzedakah, is that more about when you're giving to an individual so the individual doesn't feel embarrassed?
Exactly, exactly. When somebody wants to give tzedakah to a friend, you need this in need, and you don't want them to see, every time you will see you be embarrassed, you give it anonymous. But when people come and don't want to tell me, "I want to give a donation to the shul anonymous," I tell them, "Your sins you should keep anonymous. Your mitzvahs you can put in public. Your averes you can do anonymous. No problem. Nobody needs to know the bad things that you do. But the good things, it's okay if people will know. You'll inspire other people to do the same." But you're right. The whole anonymous thing is when you help other people and you don't want them to be embarrassed. You know, every time they see you again, they get embarrassed. Then you do it in a way that they don't even know. And there is millions of stories like this. But when you do something to inspire a community to do good, even this that you do anonymous, you better tell people that you do anonymous. You understand? The guy who get it didn't know, but other people should know, because an history proved, and it's written in Tanya too, then people who do things anonymous end up to do less than people do it publicly. The Yetzer Hara is involved in every mitzvah. We are not holy people. We are not. We didn't get rid of our evil inclination. The nature of life is that when you do something that other people will know, you do it better. The Talmud says about Reuven. You know, it's written in the Bible that Reuven tried to save Joseph from the pit. When they tried to throw him out, they wanted to kill him. He said, "Throw him in the pit." And the Talmud says, if Reuven would know that every child in Cheder will learn that Reuven tried to save him, he would do a better job. Reuven, in the Bible. If he would know that everyone would learn about that, he would do a better job. That's the reality of life. And you know that other people will know, you do better. That's a fact. That's nature. That's how we are. Okay, Rabbi, you want to continue?
It is not enough to study Torah and do good deeds as a private individual. Only one is obligated to serve the needs of the entire community from a leadership position and dedicate himself fully to their benefit. Hence the verse says, with justice, a king sustains the land. When a person assumes leadership and tends to the needs of the community, he sustains the world. But when someone acts like a teruma and confines himself to his own corner, even if he engages in deeds of loving kindness, he tears it down. His lack of leadership creates a void, and he is therefore considered to have torn it down.
Aha. Uh-huh. And anybody, nobody knows if he's meant to be a leader. Nobody is born a leader. But he has to try it. And you're right, like Michael said before, you start with your family, you're a leader in your family. We're not sacrificing the family for the community, but you can be a leader in the family, then in your bigger groups, the people that you spend time, the people that you engage, and then there is a bigger group. Everyone can be a leader in the world. Every human being is a leader, and you just need to utilize it. Okay. Wendy, you want to continue?
Don't underestimate your ability. However, the evil inclination is cunning. He might approach you and argue, this all may be true, but it doesn't apply to you. Everyone has their personal path, and your path is to be a teruma. Proof of the matter is, you do not have the character of the communal activist.
You do not have the, you're not made for it. You're a shy person, you're quiet. You're not made to be a communal activist. Yeah, the big mouths, the bachers, they go run around and scream and yell. Yeah, they're made for it, but not us, not you. I am not made for it, I'm shy. I must tell you, when I started as a young boy, we had to go from door to door to visit families to convince them to buy a letter in a Torah and things like this. It was painful, it was not easy. And I also was very shy. You know, until I got married, I never spoke in public. Never, ever, ever. Then, because I was very shy to do it. But then a person says, yeah, it's true, but it's not for me. That's what the Rebbe is talking about. Continue.
The evil inclination understands that the individual could counter-argue that he does have the necessary abilities and his reticence is merely a result of self-centeredness. So the evil inclination has a new idea. He will persuade you that other people think you don't have the necessary abilities either. Although communal activism is very worthy indeed, it is simply out of character for you. And since you can utilize your time for all sorts of worthy endeavors, communal activism is clearly not your God-given mission.
Exactly. It's not for, basically, it's all nice and fine, but it's not for me. Leslie, you want to continue?
The response is, first of all, that these thoughts have no validity simply because they are probably come directly from the evil inclination. It is very likely that, in fact, you are inclined to form this work.
Okay, now that's the first explanation. First of all, who could be you? You're just convincing yourself that you're not capable, because you know, to say that I'm not capable is very beneficial. I'm not capable, don't bother me, it's not me, somebody else should do it. That sounds very good. But there is more to it. And here we come to something very, very interesting. Continue, Leslie, and source number Rabbi, two.
Rabbi Shimon?
Mm-hmm.
Rabbi Shimon opens with these words. These are the laws that you shall place before them. In the Aramaic translation, he says, these are the judgments which you shall arrange for them. This refers to the arrangement of reincarnation, which is the judgments of souls who are sent back into this world according to their individual judgments.
Wow. You ever heard about reincarnation, right? Judaism believes in reincarnation. And the Zohar says, this is from the Zohar, Kabbalah, says these are the judgment of reincarnation. God decides who comes back to the world. What do you know about reincarnation, my friend? Hello? Such a silent. People. What's going on?
It's just you being reincarnated to finish what you haven't finished.
There you go, Oleg. Finally, somebody saved me. Good job.
Well, a lot of Jewish people think that we don't believe in reincarnation.
Oh, I'll have to be reincarnated one more time to learn about it.
Isn't that why we're supposed to be born in or buried in a box without a bottom so that our souls can go back to become part of the earth and then it gets
we're supposed to be buried in a box, but that's not because of reincarnation. There's so many other reasons, because it's written in the Bible we came from dust and have to go back to dust. But reincarnation is the soul, not the body. Go ahead.
But you said, Rabbi, before, I remember a while back for example, you could get people think reincarnation as another person or something. You said you could be reincarnated as a tree and become part of a table or something.
Okay, let's wait with the trees. Let's talk about people. Okay, Ed, you want to read source number 4?
Yes, thank you. Sometimes the Torah's ruling seems to bring about an unjust result, as in the case where someone deposited a large fortune by a friend and went out on a long journey. When he returned, his friend had died and his heirs denied any knowledge of the deposit. They were instructed to swear in rabbinic court that they knew nothing of the matter and were absolved of the claim. However, everyone knew the claimant to be an honest and God-fearing man, and the sum of money was far beyond the deceased's means.
Okay. There is a story about a man who lended money to another person and then he died, and his kids are coming to the... somebody deposit money by another person. And when he came back, the person he deposited the money in his hand died. He's asking for the children. They say, we don't know anything about it. Our father never told us. They went to court. They took an oath that they say the truth and they went home. And but this guy, and everybody knew that this other guy who died could not leave to his children so much money. He never had so much money in his life. He was a nine, but and everybody knew that this is the truth, that Mr. A gave it to Mr. B. He had a lot of money. He left town. But the son said, our father never told us anything. And in court, they came out not guilty. They're not the money. They're innocent. Continue.
They asked the Baal Shem Tov, how could Torah law produce such an unjust result? Are we not taught that God ensures the justice of Torah rulings? He answered that everything is
orchestrated. Now the question is, it's written that God is in, so to speak, is in every court. God makes sure that the judges in the court should not make mistakes. That now everybody knows the truth. How such a thing can happen? That's what his question. That's what he read about the answer of the Baal Shem Tov. He answered.
He answered that everything is orchestrated by God. In a past life, the claimant owed the deceased this amount of money and never paid his debt. And now he repaid his debt to rectify the situation. It was all orchestrated by God. The amount was exact, not a penny more or less. This is true judgment. Even if it seems to you to be unjust, follow Torah's guidelines and don't seek compromise.
Yeah, see what's going on here? It says like this. Yeah, Mr. A lost money by Mr. B. Why it happened? Why the Torah allows it? Because the rabbis, they don't know what happened in past life, but they go by the rule. If God, everything is controlled by God. If it may, you lost money to Mr. B, it means that in the past life, you took money from Mr. B. Both of you were here before, and you never gave him back the money. And for this reason, God sent both of you down to earth, that you should give the money back. God did you a favor. The whole idea of reincarnation is giving a person a second chance and a third chance. Every soul gets 3 chances. The first chance when he's here and another 3 chances to fix it. And God gives us people chances again to fix what they messed up. And that's why when you come out from the Beit Din, from the Jewish court, don't be upset and say the whole Judaism is not true. Da, da, da. It meant to be. And that's why the Rebbe always supported the ruling of rabbis. When it was in a court, and they wrote to the Rebbe that the rabbis were corrupted and this. The Rebbe says, follow it. Because even if they were corrupted, if it meant to be, obviously, God wants you to lose the money to this guy, maybe in the past life, maybe who knows what. This is the system, and if God created this system, that it has to walk through the system. That's how we look on life. And that's what the Baal Shem Tov told them. You maybe lost the money, and it's, but there is no proofs, right? But how could God do it? Maybe in the past life you had to do it. There is unbelievable examples of reincarnation and how it works on many levels. We will, I give you one example. I can speak hours on reincarnation, but I'll give you an example. There is a story in the Talmud about a rabbi who was 18 years old and they want to appoint him, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, to appoint him. We read about him in the Agada. And they wanted to appoint him the leader as the Jew of the Jewish people. He was 18 years old. And his wife told him, you are so young, who is going to listen to you? The wife will never always, instead of encouraging him, she told him, you will be a leader, who are you, Bachlan? In any case, his beard turned white. And he said, in the Agada we say, he said, I'm like a 70-year-old man, right? It's in the Agada. Then the question is, why he chose to say, I'm like a 70-year-old man? Why he didn't say, like, I'm a 65 years old? 55. I'm 54 and I have a white beard. You don't have to be 70-year-old. It can be 60. Then why he said 70? Then Kabbalah tells us that Elazar ben Azariah, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, was a reincarnation of the prophet Samuel. Samuel lived to be 52 years old when he died. And he was 18. He says, I'm like a 70-year-old man. What he wanted to say with it, he said, don't look at me like I'm an 18-year-old man. I am cashing on the experience of my past life. I'm like a 70-year-old man. By the way, this explains how, you know, many times you see a young boy like Mark Zuckerberg, 28 years old when he started, he was worth billions of dollars. And every Chochem sits and thinks to himself, I'm much more smart than Mark Zuckerberg. Who is this little boy, knows nothing. Look over what he's doing, millions. Why I cannot make millions? He's 28 years old, but he might be counting on knowledge and wisdom and experience that somehow in the subconscious is of a past life or three past life that is a reincarnation. Of a very smart businessman, who knows, maybe Don Isaac Abarbanel, who was the finance minister of Spain, maybe is his reincarnation, we don't know. Then the whole idea of reincarnation explains many things in life. God forbid, in Tzores also, when somebody, God forbid, when a child, God forbid, dies, then it's from the Baal Shem Tov, and the Rebbe told it to people, it means that this child, this soul that to come for 6-7 years, whatever the age is, to complete something in the world. And when they finish their mission, they move on. Then the point is reincarnation is opening a window that you don't know what is your mission in life. It might be, even if you think it's not, this is the mission. And that's where the Rebbe is taking it. Barry, you want to, what? Go ahead.
How did the 18-year-old rabbi, I can't remember his name you just gave, how did he know he was a reincarnated
person? Ah, for this you have to be a holy man. Me and you don't know these things. He knew, I don't. You don't. Maybe you know, I don't. Then,
can I just say something
real quick? Sure, please.
So if anybody's interested, I'm just going to give a plug. Rabbi Shmuley from Beechwood Chabad is giving a class that starts today. It's one of those JLI classes, and I think it's called Journey of the Soul. And there's a Sunday morning class that's actually during this class time, but they say it's recorded, the Zoom session, and the other one is on Wednesday nights, and you get the first one free. So if anyone's interested, I think the website is myjli.com, and it's about this reincarnation. It looks really interesting.
So. Very nice. Great. Thank you. Barry, you want to continue your ultimate mission?
Wendy, can you send it just to the chat link that will be copied? Okay, thank you.
Moreover, even if it is indeed out of character for you, the very fact that you were asked to engage in communal activism means that this mission is a soul connection with you. Does it seem otherwise? In Judaism, there is a concept of reincarnation. Even if it doesn't seem right to you in your current state, it is possible that in a former life, this was a mission you needed to accomplish, and it still needs to be carried out. Interestingly, the Zohar's writings about reincarnation are on this very verse. This idea is explained in Maaseh Oreg on the Mishnah regarding the Mishnah's reference to the words Emet Lamito, the truth of the truth. What is the difference between that and ordinary truth? To explain, he shares a story of the Baal Shem Tov. A person once entrusted money in the hands of a friend, and the friend died. When the depositor approached the heirs, they denied any knowledge of the incident. As per Torah law, in a case where there are no witnesses, they swore in rabbinical court that they had no knowledge of the matter and were excused from the case. However, it was common knowledge that the depositor was right. Everyone knew him to be an honest man, and they also knew that the heirs inherited a sum of money far beyond their father's means. They came to the Baal Shem Tov and asked the rabbinical judge followed the ruling of Torah, the Torah of truth. If so, God surely upholds and supports that decision. No doubt it reflects the truth, but how does it concur with the reality? The Baal Shem Tov responded, in a previous incarnation, the depositor owed a similar sum to the deceased or to his children. So the ruling was just. The money does, in fact, belong to them.
You see, by the way, this is a very comforting concept about everything, about the Holocaust, about everything. This explains that we see in life, we are like somebody who comes in the middle. I'll give you an example. Sometimes you watch a movie with your wife, you fall asleep. And then you wake up again, you start to ask, why is he doing this? She says, well, you ask a question. Next time, be awake. Don't watch it and fall asleep and then start to ask questions. We are coming in the middle of the movie and we start to ask questions and God, how dare you do such a thing? You're in the middle of the movie, Motek, my dear. You don't know what's going on. There was a past life. There is going to be another life. You don't know the full picture. You know, sometimes you see a family is having a fight and you're trying to resolve it. And, you know, it happened to me as a rabbi. I tried once a few times, tried to resolve family problems. And when I digged a little deeper, I saw that it's so deep and it's so many years of a fight and so many layers. And don't get out of it. You'll just not be able to undo it. Then what we see in life is just a glimpse. We don't see the full picture. That when a person feels wronged, he has two choices. He can go around angry, or he can say, you know what? That's what meant to be. Maybe in the past life, maybe it's good for me. Maybe that's my correction. That's why I came to the world, to fix it.
So, Rabbi, so then, since we don't know which life we're in, mm-hmm. we just have to trust if it happens to us this way, it might be because we're making up, you know, where we're getting, you know, it's coming back to us. Or it could be we should feel comfort in it's okay, it's happening this way, but we're coming back and it'll be
both of them are true. Both of them are true.
And either way, it's just accepting that this is the way God wanted it, no matter
exactly,
what.
Exactly. It doesn't mean that I'm coming this time and there's something that I have, it's because I did something bad. There is a famous story about the Baal Shem Tov. I didn't plan to say it, but I will tell you because this can give a good example to it. That once, we'll do it in short, it's a very painful story that a couple could not have children. She could not have children for many years and used to come to the Baal Shem Tov, beg for children. Every year he used to give him a blessing, but they never had children. One year they decided they are not let him get away with it. They got into his room, into his study, and they told him, Rebbe, we are not leaving until you give us a blessing. They knew, they got the promise is going to have children. Fine. They left and a baby was born. A year later, a baby was born. The whole city was happy, the parents, it was unbelievable. Then the 2 years passed, they decided to take the baby to the Baal Shem Tov to show him and she give a blessing. They came to the Baal Shem Tov, And the Baal Shem Tov was picking up the baby, holding it, smiling to it. And he gave him the baby. He didn't give him a blessing. It was very strange. They walked away a little strange, but you know, that's what they did. That's what they did. A short time later, the child got sick and passed away. The parents were devastated, obviously. They came to the Baal Shem Tov back and told him, Rebbe, what you did to us? If you wouldn't give us a baby, to give us a child and to lose him is worse. We better not be that obvious. The Baal Shem Tov told them, I want to tell you a story. He says a few, 100 to 200 years before that, it was a city, it was, you know, it was in Poland, used to be, it's called a Poretz. A Poretz, it was like a duke, it's called like a sheriff. Every sheriff owned like, was owning the land in Solon, landowners. And in his territory, he could do whatever he wants with the people who live there. Literally, they're his slaves. They have no hope. They're completely dependent on them. No rule, no state rule, no government, no nothing. He's the boss. And there was a Jewish community by a good landowner. Life was good, but this landowner tried everything. He could not have children. One day, priest told him, you know who has the key for your problems? The Jews. They have connections with God. They will pray to God. They will have children. You'll have children. Fine. And he says, but what do you mean? He says, the Jews will tell you that they cannot do it. It's too hard for them. You have to give them an ultimatum. If they cannot get your child within a year, they're out of your property. Thrown out, all of them, to the street. Go. The landowner, nothing to lose, the poets, he calls the leaders of the Jewish community. He tells them, guys, you know that I don't have children. You know that I'm very nice to you all the years. I need you to get me, to pray to God to get me a child. If not, you're out of here. They told him, stop to tell him, what are you saying? We can do, we can pray, we can try, but I cannot promise you. We are human beings. I don't want to inform anything. That's your problem. They left. They started to pray. And they prayed to God. They started to fast. The community was fasting Mondays and Thursdays. And they prayed to God, God, just help us. There's our Londoners. Some guy said in his head, he wants us to throw us out because of this. Just save us. And the Baal Shem Tov continues that in heaven, it will became a big discussion. God, so to speak, was asking, who is the soul who is ready to volunteer to be born to the landowner, to the non-Jewish poets, to save the Jewish community? And one great soul said that she is ready to do it. A Jewish soul, a very holy soul. And within a year, a baby was born to this landowner, to these poets. And the baby was a very beautiful baby and smart and everything. Within a few years, no local teacher was able to teach her. Finally, his father, who loved them so much, bought a teacher from out of town to teach him. And obviously the community stayed in the place, the Jews were saved, everything was good. And this teacher had a custom that 1 hour a day in the morning, he locks himself up. And then the rest of the day, he was teaching the boy. The boy loved this teacher very much. And he wanted to know what is the teacher doing in this hour. And he was a spoiled boy. He got everything that he wanted. He sneaked into the, he found the key, sneaked into the to his teacher's office, lay down under the bed. And he wanted to see when the teacher walks in and locks himself up, what is he doing? The teacher walks in, he locks himself up, and he hears him doing things. He gets out of bed, he sees the teacher wrapped with on his hand and with boxes on his hand and on his head. And he jumps out and says, what is it? The teacher turned white, blue, yellow, every color in the world. The teacher was a Jew, a hidden Jew, who used to daven every day. And he was not considered a Jew. If the landowner would know that he's Jewish, he might be in big trouble. He tells the boy, who give you permission to go here? I cannot tell you what it is. He tells him, if you don't tell me what it is, I'm going straight to my father. He had no choice, he had to tell him. He tells him there is something, it's called Judaism, but you don't have to know about it. Your father will kill me if I will tell you about the Jewish people. He tells him, no, you have to tell me. And yet he was a very smart boy, had a very high level of curiosity. He forced the teacher to tell him more and more and more and more. And it was never enough. And he wanted to know more and he grew up and he tells him one day his teacher, I want to be Jewish, I want to convert to Judaism. He tells him, are you crazy? If you convert to Judaism, your father will kill me and will throw out the whole Jewish community from me. Until, but he wanted more and more. He was already a big boy. He was 16, 17 years old, maybe older. He came up with a plan. He came to his father. He told his father that he has nothing to learn with his teacher. He's bored and he needs to go out to learn in a college. His father didn't want to send him to college. He didn't want to leave him. He loved him so much. He wanted him to should stay home. But he nudged. He finally told him, okay, go. He went to college. One day he disappeared. They found the clothing by the river. They found the clothing. Basically, it looked like he drowned. Something, his father was mourning and yelling, but that's it, drowned. What really happened, he disappeared. He went to a different country. He went to the rabbi there. He showed them that he knows a lot about Judaism. And he convinced the rabbi to convert him. He converted Judaism and he lived the rest of his life as a Jew. And he died as a Jew with a family, everything. He came to heaven. He was the purest neshama that came to heaven in many years. He saved the whole Jewish community. And he on his own, find his own way to convert and so on. They said he can go to heaven straight. But then came the persecutor. He said, but there is one little problem for him. For such a special soul, for him it's considered a problem. The first 2 years he nursed from a non-Jewish mother, weighed many things. Then this needs to be corrected. That they were looking for a family that the baby should be born for 2 years, a Jewish family, and he should be nursed from a Jewish mother. And the Baal Shem Tov says, and you were chosen, he turns to the couple and he says, you were the chosen couple. And this was the baby that was born for 2 years, and he was a very high soul, and he came back for 2 years. And he told them, because you did this thing in such a good way, God now will bless you with the children that will illuminate the world. And they were and their children became great. The next child was a great rabbi in the Hasidic world. That's a story from the Baal Shem Tov that tells us that a person that is dealing with troubles in this life doesn't mean that he did something wrong in the past life. Could be just the opposite. Because he's such a high level soul, God entrusted in his end special children because they knew that they can handle it and they will do it. They will do the best job. Then we don't know why, but we just know one thing, that what we see here is not the whole story. There is past. There is future, there is everything in between. Let's continue to learn from inside. I don't remember where I am.
Masa Oreg.
Yeah, Masa Oreg. Okay, I think Oleg, it's your turn.
Okay.
Go ahead, Masa Oreg.
Yeah, Masa Oreg thereby explained the term, truth of the truth. Sometimes a ruling doesn't seem correct from our earthly perspective, but it does, in fact, mute our justice in light of details which are not known to us in this world. Mm-hmm. This story is about a material item. There is a possibility that you will know without a shadow of doubt that you do not owe someone money, but in fact, according to the truth of truth, you actually do. If so, the same can be true in a spiritual level. The true truth is that based on a previous incarnation or due to some circumstances that only your soul is aware of, you owe a spiritual debt to your friend. And you are thereby being dispatched to feel that debt.
See, what's going on here is like this. A person doesn't know, and you know, that's what we are here sitting together on the same Zoom. Could be that in the past life we were relatives, and that's why we are attracted to each other. We're sharing the same soul, the same spark of the same soul. You know, there is general souls, and from every general soul, there is spark of the souls. And when these sparks come out, more sparks, that when a certain group of people and gravitate to each other, it's because we are connected, we are spiritually connected. And that's why sometimes you say, it doesn't, or a couple you see sometimes, it doesn't make sense how these two got married. Like you think, it's crazy. Mm-hmm. It might be crazy, but the souls are connected. Who was the rabbi? I think you were the, who was the no, Steve, read this. This is a very important piece. Well, this will finish. I don't hear you, Steve. I don't hear you. You mute yourself. Unmute yourself.
I'm sorry, sir. The Alter Rebbe received the following teaching from the righteous Rabbi Mordechai, who had heard it from the Baal Shem Tov. A soul may descend to this world and live 70 or 80 years in order to do a Jew a material favor and certainly a spiritual one.
You know, this message from the Baal Shem Tov is so amazing and so painful. You come to the world for 78 years. You do many mitzvahs. You do. You learn. You go. You drive yourself crazy. You had the problems in life and everything. But there is one mitzvah. You came here for one mission. And you could miss this important mission that you came for. The problem is you don't know what your mission is. That's the problem. You came for 70, 80 years to the world. And it came a moment. And you had to say yes, and you said no. And you lost it. And therefore, when a person comes in and something, you have to think like this. And when you think like this, you don't dismiss too quick the opportunities that you have. God sent you. You never know. That's a problem. Then you came to, you have a mission. Every human being has a mission, especially every Jew. But you don't know that. And you can come, you know, sometimes you see people do sanctify God's name in public in an unbelievable big way. And you don't know, and many times I think to myself, he came to the world to accomplish this. The rest of it was a by the way. I remember many years ago, you remember when Yom Kippur, it was a sport game, a playoff, a Yom Kippur or something, a Kol Nidre, what was it? Rob, you probably remember.
Andy Kopech.
No, in Cleveland,
No, he's talking about when we played again the Chicago Cubs. That's what he was talking about.
Yes, yeah, it was Yom Kippur, Kol Nidre, right?
When the Indians first made the playoffs, I think when they came back and tried to be good again in 90.
No, you weren't even, Rabbi, you weren't even saying, hey, in Chicago, they have Jews too. They also are praying.
One second, I'm not even going there. Wait.
It was on, the first playoff game was on Kol Nidre.
Kol Nidre.
When they became.
94, I remember. I just came to Cleveland. I remembered it well.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
awesome. Okay. Yeah, 94. I know Rabbi will remember. At least somebody will say. Then what happened is, it was a guy from the community, I know him, a Jewish guy, and he had a ticket and became a big discussion to go to the ticket or not to go to the game or not to go. And a guy was at the front page of Plain Dealer, he had a ticket and he says, I'm giving up my tickets, Kol Nidre is more important to me. I remember telling his wife, more correct, then he came to the world for this moment. He made such a sanctity, he sanctified God's name in such a strong public way. You know, everyone has his moment. And if you're lucky enough to utilize your moment, you did it. And I saw many people who failed their moment, so to speak, the 15 minute of fame who could do something amazing and make a statement. And, hey, he didn't have time, he didn't this. And there are other people who knew how to utilize the moment. And that's
what
why.
You say, right? That was 94?
95.
95. I didn't make it in 94.
Yeah. It is another genius in sports. Yeah, 95. Then, 95, Baruch Hashem, 95. The point is, and I don't remember now, I had many examples for it, of people that utilize the moment and they did the right thing. You know, sometimes somebody goes on the world stage, like when Netanyahu gets up in the UN and he says that the land is a holy land and we're not about to give it back. And this is what God gets, God's land to the Jewish people. And you think to yourself, this man came to the world just for this 5 minutes. He did the right thing in the right place. It's all about utilizing, and that's what 70, 80 years in this, doing a favor to a person, doing a big favor to all Jewish people, or to a community, or to a nation. Then when opportunity presents to you, never say no, because it might be, this is it. And that's how we drive ourselves crazy. Enjoy.
Super quick question, Rabbi. These essays by the Rebbe, did he write them originally in Yiddish, Hebrew, English?
He spoke them in Yiddish, and it was written in Hebrew, in English, not for language.
The English is super precise. Super precise.
Yeah, this English, actually, my son Mendy translated for me.
Ah, fantastic.
He's involved in this project. It's a new project, yeah. He translates the Rebbe's talks. There is some videos, and they asked him to be. In the last few years, he's the one who translates the Rebbe's talks in English. They took him because he's very good on the job. Yeah. He's doing a good job. I'm very proud of him. It's actually a job that I wish I would have, but I don't know English, which I do. Then, in any case, guys, thank you. It was nice to
thank you, Rabbi.
We are good with your job. So.
Thank you. I didn't miss my calling, huh?
You did a great job.
Thank you.
Sure, God is pleased.
I hope so. Bye-bye.
Good week. Stay awesome.
Bye.
See you, everyone.
Thank you, Rabbi.